Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's got his voice back to some extent. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, anytime the Middle East leads in the headlines, we know that it's probably going to inhabit the bad martini. And once again, that is true. And this time it actually leads off our three martinis instead of the good, but you'll see why in a moment. The U.S. narrative of this has been kind of pathetic ever since it happened, with the White House and the entire administration insisting that it's this video. It's has nothing to do with pent-up anger and hatred of radical Islamists against the U.S. government and so forth. So once again, on Fox News Sunday, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, was the guest. Chris Wallace started the interview by playing Jay Carney's clip saying, "This has nothing to do with American policy in the Middle East or anywhere else. This has everything to do with a video." And here's a couple of clips of Susan Rice trying to back that up.
What sparked the recent violence was the airing on the internet of a very hateful, very offensive video that has offended many people around the world.
And she went on at that point to say that it's no excuse for the violence, but still it's the movie's fault. And she says that it's in a long line of things that have been responsible for deadly Islamic violence.
There's no question that, as we've seen with in the past with things like Satanic Verses, with the cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, there have been such things that have sparked outrage and anger, and this has been the proximate cause of what we've seen.
Now, Jim, I almost wonder if this administration kind of feels stupid that it's still defending this narrative, especially when we see in the second martini about all the facts that have been brought to light about how this probably was a very deeply coordinated strike, but the fact that they expect us to believe this is offensive.
More than a little unnerving that they would try to spin something like this. As I said in the Morning Jolt, this is not an issue you can spin. I almost am waiting for Janet Napolitano to come out and say, "The system worked, everything is fine, you know, stop paying attention to this." Because look, you know, yes, we understand that, you know, they're still gathering facts and all that stuff. My understanding is that the FBI is still not on the ground in Benghazi. You need a secure crime scene before you can actually start the investigation, and at this point, we can't guarantee the security of Americans. You know, when you hear the explanation from the Libyans, who have actually been doing their own investigation, my understanding is they've arrested 40 people. Lord knows whether that's actual likely perpetrators or whether it's kind of the equivalent of round up the usual suspects, but at least you'd assume the Libyan authorities would have some familiarity with this. And what they're saying is a fairly serious charge to make. They know they're already in trouble with the American public. To be spinning a tale about folks coming to the country to commit this attack when there's no evidence would seemingly only be exacerbating the situation. My suspicion is, and you know, Mike Rogers, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, was on some of the Sunday shows yesterday, and he's laying out why he thinks this was a, you know, pre-planned attack. And he's talking about, you know, using direct fire and indirect fire, and the fact that they came from several different directions, and the fact that they're using rocket-propelled grenades and artillery. You know, I mean, Greg, people don't bring artillery to protests. You know, that's
not usually.
This is not fitting the traditional, oh, it was a big protest that got out of control. The other thing I'd just be fascinating about is why Ambassador Rice is totally convinced that coverage of an event in Cairo would cause a huge reaction in Benghazi. And the other thing which is fascinating is that we've seen protests, you know, basically from one end of the Muslim world to another. Rocket-propelled grenades and AK-47s and stuff like that have not been standard. It was really only in Benghazi you saw this particular level of violence and this particular level of effort to kill someone being at the centerpiece of the reaction to this. So, I don't think the administration has a very plausible line here. I'm willing to hear additional evidence from the FBI. I don't think it does Hillary Clinton any good to come out and say, you know, or the State Department to say, we're not going to, you know, answer any further questions on this while the investigation is ongoing. I mean, I hear that, and I'm reminded of the Fast and Furious investigation, Greg, that, you know, that's a typical line you invoke when there's, you know, something unsavory there, and you just don't want people to look at it that hard. You're waiting for the story to leave the headlines.
People hate us, and they'll use any hook they can to demonstrate that and to, if they can, lash out in a violent and fatal way. Florida Congressman Alan West articulated that about as well as anyone I saw on the other side of this debate, which unfortunately is a debate, thanks to the line that the administration is still peddling. He was on Justice with Jeanine Pirro on the Fox News Channel on Sunday night, and here's a couple of clips of what he had to say.
Asinine, naive, inept, incompetent, and borderline ignorant. because when you understand that the Egyptian government, their intelligence services, put out a letter talking about a potential threat of attacks and uprisings about a week before this, it was even printed in the Jerusalem Post on 9/11.
And he points out that during his time in the service, after 9/11, each anniversary prompted a security upgrade. And so he's not quite sure that Ambassador Rice has a full grasp on what a coordinated attack is. But even if she does, he's still not buying it.
And for Susan Rice to say that this was not a well-coordinated attack, first of all, I'd have to ask her what is her line of expertise and understand what a well-coordinated attack is. Because this was not happenstance, it was not coincidence, this was well-planned, well-coordinated, and the president there in Libya confirms that.
And that's another aspect of it, the Libyan president, which, of course, it's in his own self-interest to have that position, but it looks like the facts bear it out as well, Jim.
This is one of those circumstances where we've all seen Alan West get a little hot under the collar and very passionate about what he's talking about. This is precisely the moment you want Alan West front and center to kind of offer the critique of the administration on this. Because right now, this is a circumstance in which we'd all like to be able to say we're 100% behind the president and his team in responding to this. The problem is that they seem to be wedded to this notion that this is all a result of a YouTube video, and if we just take care of the YouTube video, the problem will go away. And the answer is no. It could be one of the things that is particularly disturbing, particularly when you look at the alleged filmmaker being taken into custody over in L.A., is our point to the Muslim world should be the First Amendment means that anybody in America can say just about anything they want, and the government does not intervene. It doesn't matter if it offends you. It doesn't matter if it is blasphemy. It doesn't matter if it violates the Muslim teachings. Under our system, the way you respond to something that offends you is you say, this offends me. And you can make your own YouTube video mocking that guy. And this, the answer to bad speech is more speech. This is an attempt by the extremist elements of the Muslim world to bring American law in line with Muslim blasphemy teachings. And unfortunately, our administration is playing into it, as opposed to our decisions to not provide sufficient security to our embassies and consulates. And secondly, host governments' inability to protect our embassies and consulates. They have a responsibility to do that. If they are incapable of doing that, our diplomatic staff don't belong there. We should not be risking people's lives over the tradition of having embassies if the host governments are incapable of meeting their most basic duties. If a crowd of irate Americans decided to attempt to storm the Iranian consulate up in New York City for the United Nations, it is the responsibility of the NYPD and everybody up in New York to protect that institution. We don't get to choose. It doesn't matter whether we like the government or not. That is our duty as a country that hosts consulates and embassies. If you can't do that, you shouldn't have consulates and embassies in your country. And maybe we have to reevaluate whether we belong in Sudan or the Sudan turned down our request to send the Marines. It sounds like the Libyan government is getting better at this, and it sounds like the Egyptian government is at least keeping the protesters at bay for the remainder of the week. But we really need to reevaluate a whole lot about our Middle East policy, and watching the administration insist time and again that this is all about just some YouTube video really is unnerving and disturbing. And
we'll see what more happens here in the days ahead. It looks like more protests today. Now it's just one feeding off the other. By the end of the week, they probably won't even remember what the supposed reason for protesting actually was, or they'll find a new one, and we'll see how much this impacts the presidential campaign. We talked about it last week, and as we get back to politics for our third and crazy martini, it looks like on the outside that, the Romney campaign is pretty calm, cool, and collected. He's the CEO. Things are running smoothly. Well, at least as it came to the nomination acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention, it was a little bit like a duck on the water. Things might have looked pretty placid on the outside, and the legs were cranking like crazy underneath, because Politico reports today Stuart Stevens, Romney's one of his chief campaign gurus, decided to scrap the usual speechwriting team, brought in an old Bush guy, Pete Wehner, who wrote a speech that Stevens decided 8 days before Romney had to give it that none of it was good. So he scrapped the whole thing, brought in a couple of other ex-Bush guys, told them they had to write the whole thing from scratch, and have it done in time for Mitt to practice it. The speech came off relatively well, Jim, but the fact that, Afghanistan got left out and a couple of other things that probably would have been good to include makes you scratch your head a little bit. And the fact that doesn't seem like Romney was anywhere around this decision.
Yeah, the fact that there was this much wrangling going on behind the scenes and last-minute changes, and the speech looks kind of miraculous. It turned out as well as it did, considering that. Look, this is a legitimate story. This tends to happen in campaigns where things aren't going well, is that people start worrying about their reputations. There have been people who have been wondering about Stu Stevens from day one, that this guy is ultimately an ad maker, and it's not really, you know, I think somebody had once said in response to Mark Penn running Hillary's campaign, never let a pollster run a presidential campaign, because their job is to read what the public wants, not to make the decisions of how to get the candidate to offer what the public wants. It just kind of the different, there's kind of certain different mentality needed for the roles. With Stevens, he's an ad maker, which you'd figure the administration, this campaign would be much better at communications. I think one of the things that I found frustrating or, you know, a little disturbing about that article in Politico is the sense that, like, they kept having drafts of the Romney convention speech and they kept tossing out the whole thing. Or almost the whole thing, and keeping one paragraph and stuff. Very interesting. They you know, you'd think that what was needed to be done was pretty straightforward. You need to introduce the country to Mitt Romney. You need to make the case against the administration. You need to make the case for your own policies. America, here's what we're going to do, and here's why it's going to work. With that very basic assignment, it seemed like they kept going back to square one over and over again. And it's you know, just kind of unnerving to think that they would. It seems like a lot of wasted effort, a lot of wasted. Noise, a lot of, you know, perpetual motion machine, things going on, but not much getting done. And so you just kind of hope that they get a little more on the ball. You know, these types of stories are not good news to hear from Republicans. On the other hand, they're kind of par for the course in circumstances like this. We'll see if anything really comes out of this. You know, it could be very much a helpful to the Romney campaign if it kind of wakes them up and realizes that, hey, you know, we have to be a well-oiled machine for the final 50 days of this election.
What we hoped would be a decent bump anyway out of the convention, didn't really materialize. The good news is Obama's bump seems to have dissipated for the most part, but I think it's safe to say that the president's got the edge right now if the election were to be held, but it's not being held today, and that's a good thing. So good luck getting the rest of the voice back. We'll talk to you later.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today on the 3 Martini Lunch, and don't forget to join us again tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.